If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
How many discounts does USAA Auto Insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy discount.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/autodiscounts. Restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the show, we're talking about The Traitors, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and Southern Charm with Jarrett Weisselman. He is a return guest who I've been meaning to have back on the show, and I'm so glad he's back because it was a great conversation. And I think particularly with The Traitors, it was great because Jarrett really knows his stuff when it comes to competition shows as well as Bravo shows. So he brought like true expertise when we were talking about The Traitors at the top of our conversation. And I just love talking about this show. Like, I know there's a lot going on in the world. The weather is bleak as hell outside, at least in New York right now. But The Traitors, to me, just provides that another level of escapism during the winter. And it's just truly something to really look forward to every single week. It's appointment television. You know, I want to be on my couch at 9 p.m. watching The Traitors when it drops on Peacock so that it's not spoiled for me. And I'm down to either make earlier plans on Thursday nights or no plans on Thursday nights just so I can be there because, again, I'm so averse to spoilers and I like being part of the viewing experience with people online. And it's just fun. Like, it just tickles me. It really does. So hang tight for that conversation. But before we get to my chat with Jarrett, we obviously have to talk about the news that Kyle Cook and Amanda Batula from Summer House are breaking up after a decade together and after 5 years of marriage. Luckily for you, this news broke right before I was going to record my previous introduction, so I held off for a bit to collect my thoughts. Let me read the statement that they both posted to their Instagram stories for you first. After much reflection, we have mutually and amicably decided to part ways as a couple. We share this with a heavy heart and kindly ask for your grace and support while we focus on our personal growth and healing. It feels ironic to ask for privacy during this time since we've always tried to be open and honest about our relationship, but your kindness and respect will go a long way as we try to navigate our next chapter, Amanda and Kyle. So they both posted this. So it's giving united front in a lot of ways. And I think, you know, it is always kind of rich for a couple in the public eye to ask for privacy, especially when on a reality show, whose ups and downs of their relationship we've seen as fans and viewers for a decade, as I said. But I was with one of my friends who watches Summer House when this statement dropped. And we were literally sitting on the subway next to each other. Shout out Molly. And we were kind of unpacking the ask for privacy during this time as they navigate the next chapter. And I think we kind of landed on that being more about being kind to them sort of as the show is airing, you know, because it's not, I think it's going to be kind of a warts and all situation. It's not going to be pretty. You know, it's going to lead to this breakup decision, I think, you know, summer house and in the city. And so I think that's more what they're saying there, which I think is totally fair. This isn't the only time we heard from them, actually, the day the statements were posted. My friend Abby Bonadies, she has founded the podcast, been on the show before. I'm sure you've seen a lot of her content before. She does the whiteboard flows on TikTok and Instagram. She posted a video just being like, let's be nice to them. Like, no need to tear anybody down after this news comes out. You know, a very nice message. And Amanda commented a bunch of white hearts on there. And then Kyle said, thank you, Abby, with a sort of tearful smiley face. So it still seems to be like an emotional thing for them. And I think that Kyle and Amanda very much loved each other. There are moments of them having a great relationship. There are moments of them not having a good relationship. And, you know, I guess I'll say up top here is that, like, I have known Kyle and Amanda for a decade at this point, which is kind of weird to think about, like, that I've been doing this for so long. And, you know, Summer House started right when I started kind of doing interviews and covering stuff professionally. And they're both good people. I've always enjoyed being around them. And I've seen firsthand them be, you know, a cute, loving couple to one another. I've also been in situations where we've been at a party or an event and they weren't, you know, side by side and they weren't spending that much time together. But I think that was sort of the nature of their relationship sometimes, I think. And of course, you know, as we talked about on the show, this statement did not come completely out of nowhere. There had been rumors swirling for months that they were living separately, which I had heard both, like, you know, when it would go public, you know, with Blinds and Dumois and Page Six. But I had also heard that several times independently as well. But, you know, Kyle and Amanda both denied it at BravoCon. They posted a few denials on Instagram stories, like that one where Amanda was in that playhouse at Lindsay's apartment. They did a an organization service that came to their apartment to sort through their apartment after BravoCon. And I think that was sort of a way to sort of dispel some of the rumors that they were living separately. You know, Sierra shut down some Kyle shade on that traders panel at BravoCon, but things kept bubbling up. I mean, Dumois at one point went completely public with it in a big way. Kyle and Amanda spent Christmas apart. There was that whole thing about him coming back from a fan's apartment at 6 a.m. that she talked about in the trailer, and then like the footage and the videos and the pictures came out, you know, showing that night. And then she commented and was like, actually, believe it or not, that was a different night. You know, apparently people on Reddit, I don't really go on Reddit that often, but a friend told me this. They started noticing that the dogs were never together anymore. You know, Kyle had one dog, Amanda had another. So the clues were there and they were pretty clear if you were paying attention. I think, you know, we knew we were going to see their struggles once again spotlighted on this upcoming season because of the trailer. So again, not completely out of nowhere, but at a certain point, I just kind of figured that they were going to keep up some sort of facade and be a little cryptic until making some sort of reveal or showing us the final straw or what ultimately led to this decision to split up on either Summer House or in the city or both. Like to me, not to be cynical, but holding it off for the spinoff, which we all hope is a successful first season, a successful premiere, so that the show lasts for a while. That means you have to have something compelling and sort of the behind the scenes of an Amanda and Kyle breakup after 10 years together that we've seen the ups and downs of. That's a compelling start to a TV show. But I always kind of felt, though, too, that was like weirdly, you know, uncharacteristic of Kyle and Amanda to do that. Because you can say a lot of things about them as a couple, but they were never ones to sort of hold back and sort of let the show dictate their lives in that kind of way, if that makes sense. I'm sure there are people that would disagree with that. But again, just from having sort of a front row seat to them over the years, that kind of, even though that was sort of what I figured, it didn't fully click with like who I know them to be and what we've seen over the years from them. So on the surface, I guess there was a sort of surprise element to this statement, even though it was not unexpected. I didn't think it was going to come right now. I thought that we were going to get it again sort of via the show. But, you know, they dropped this statement both on their Instagram stories on a Monday holiday. Everybody's off work. There's less media coverage on days like this. And that's intentional. You know, that's why people, you know, celebrities always are dropping news at 6 p.m. on a Friday or on a weekend or on a holiday. Like that means that they're trying to get less coverage of it. And this is also right before the Summer House season starts. We're 2 weeks out from Summer House season 10. They have not started to do press for it, but I'm sure that starts soon if they haven't already done like, you know, big interviews or big profiles. So this is getting ahead of that, right? Like this is so they don't have to talk in circles. They have less to talk around or even kind of straight up lie about in interviews, you know, for the sake of the show. And they can go in with talking points and be aligned. And, you know, again, they put out the same statement. So that shows me that they are, even though they're breaking up, there's an amicable nature to it. They are aligned on certain capacities. And this is one of them. I think they're going to, you know, I think that doesn't always happen in celebrity breakups. We've seen different statements, I mean, from different reality stars on Bravo when they've broken up. So to put out the same statement, I think tells me a lot. And who knows if it stays amicable? You know, we know that like once a season airs and they see what, you know, somebody has been saying about them or what's happening in confessionals, or they see a scene that they were not present at, or sometimes the fans and the viewers sort of, you know, drum things up that, you know, get them in their feelings. So who knows if it will stay amicable. But it feels like right now it is. And obviously they've also had their fair share of ups and downs over the years. That is very much not a secret to all of us. If you're listening to this 10 minutes into the show, you know that he cheated on her famously, and he has had other cheating allegations against him. You know, and he just couldn't let go of the party lifestyle. That's been a huge sticking point in their relationship. And in fact, like when she asked him to let it go, he doubled down and became a DJ. And I think that, you know, a lot of people have been wanting this to happen for her sake for years. She's dealt with a lot. And I think there's a lot to admire in someone who wants to try to figure it out in a relationship and not give up at the first big hurdle. But at a certain point, it felt like the writing was on the wall for Kyle and Amanda. But I feel like she had to see that on her own. You know, if we saw so many people talk to her over the years, friends on the shows and things like that, you know, telling her that she deserves better and that Kyle should treat her better and she shouldn't have to put up with all of his antics. And she put up with all of his antics for so long. So it's not like people haven't been trying to tell her, but she had to finally see it for herself fully and clearly. And I think for him, it's obviously a huge loss. And again, I do like Kyle as a person. I've known him for a long time and we have a good relationship. But I do think that this kind of proves once and for all that Kyle's true love, his true passion, what really gets him going and up in the morning is his business. For better or worse, like that's what gets him the most activated. That's what gets most of his attention. And I think the DJing, you know, hosting parties essentially, combined with Loverboy, an alcohol company, which fuels the party, on the back of Summer House, a show about a party house, all those things together kind of provide this perfect synergy in his eyes of like combining his ideal party lifestyle and business. And those are two things that he loves and can't give up. I think that's why we're hearing this breakup statement. And I'm sure he's making a lot of money off of this. It feels like a very lucrative thing. And that's probably why he feels like he can't not pursue it. But, you know, and I'm sure we'll see a bunch of other stuff like that will contribute to the downfall of their relationship ultimately. But, you know, from what we know as viewers, it sort of feels like he has chosen that over the relationship. And maybe that's not the case. Maybe Amanda's sticking point is something else. Maybe it wasn't Amanda. I mean, it does feel like it's Amanda, but, you know, we only know so much right now. And here's the thing, like, if that's what Kyle wants to do and that's what he's passionate about and that's what he finds success in, then he has every right to go for it, but not with Amanda having to wait on the sidelines and to be treated, you know, in the way that he sometimes treated her. So I don't blame Amanda for seemingly wanting to get out of that, maybe as a result. Again, this is all speculation and trying to guess what went on here based on what we've known from 10 years of viewing the show. We, of course, do not know what the final straw was, and I hope that that remains a mystery until it's actually revealed to us on the show. Because, you know, I keep on thinking about how Bronwyn's announcement that she split from Todd was ruined because somebody leaked it, and then she had to confirm it to Page Six before the reunion trailer, before the reunion came out. I don't like, there's something about that I don't like. And so even though we know that Kyle and Amanda aren't going to last as a couple, I hope that the reasoning, I hope that what really leads to it, I hope that we find that out on the show. Like I can wait, you know, like I think that if we find that out in other ways, it will just make the show feel redundant and anticlimactic. So I hope that it happens on the show. You know, what happens to Loverboy? You know, my bet is Amanda continues to step away more and more. Maybe she retains her stake and her equity in it, but that's it. Maybe she'll keep doing some branding work for them, but it sounds like she's pretty hands-off right now. And I bet you that continues to be the trend there. Because again, this whole thing reads as amicable to me. So there's a way for them to keep working together. I mean, Summer House is a job and they're going to continue to work together there and on in the city. But I think, again, they just wanted to make sure they were rolling it out in a way that was smart and thought through and worked for both of them. And obviously, you know, a moment like this, as we've seen with plenty of previous Bravo breakups, but like namely, you know, Ariana and Paige, it can be a huge launching pad to bigger opportunities, usually for the woman in this situation. Again, bigger opportunities, wider reach, more fan love. So I predicted this will be an even bigger year for Amanda and just like a lot of things will come her way. When I was thinking about putting together this introduction and sort of, you know, my mind was swirling with all the thoughts after seeing the statements, I was like, there's been this thing in the back of my head when Matt Rogers was on Watch What Happens Live and he was talking about how he loves Kyle and Amanda and they had hung out in Cannes with Heather Gay. He said this thing where he was like, I think Amanda's headed for a Paige moment. She's going to have a big Paige moment. And I think a lot of people immediately interpreted it as, oh my God, like the speculation's true. Kyle and Amanda are going to be done. You know, that's what a Paige moment is. It's an Ariana moment. It's, you know, you're suddenly single and then your career takes on new heights. And then he commented on Instagram being like, oh my God, that's not what I meant at all. I just meant that she's like, you know, primed for even more success and it doesn't have to do with Kyle. But I think that was a slip up. I think he did mean it that way, you know, and then he got I keep thinking about that little moment because it was very telling. A couple other thoughts that popped into my head before we get to our chat. Sierra was there for Paige a lot last year. And while we ultimately like didn't see that split come to fruition on camera, we saw a lot of what led to it. And again, Sierra was like a real one for Paige in that. And I think we're going to see that strong friendship on display once again this season with Amanda. I think Sierra is very much, as you know, as the trailer indicates, she's going to be that sounding board for Amanda. And I think because of the spinoff, though, we will be able to see how that nets out on camera. That's going to be the difference between the you know, Craig, Paige and Amanda and Kyle situations, is that we will see the sort of end result and sort of the fallout from it on the spinoff. You know, if we don't see the actual conversation, again, we will see the effects. And the other thought I had was like, we can kind of like officially slot Kyle in with the Craigs and Austins and Sheps and Toms of the world. You know, our Bravo Peter Pans that can't fully settle down. It's something that should honestly be studied at this point, where it's like these men of a certain age, like elder millennial kind of guys who have reality TV stardom on a network that is viewed, you know, mostly by women, or, you know, a large chunk viewed by women, which means that like, It's what Wes talked about, why he couldn't settle down with Sierra after his first season, which is like there's so much apparent temptation and attention from women, and it's not an excuse by any means. It's just sort of an understanding of like what keeps these men from settling down, I guess, which is just like the constant opportunities in that regard. I don't know. It's not a fully formed thought, but I just kind of like those guys obviously came to mind as this news came out. One more relationship sort of that was, I guess, ultimately doomed in this reality world. And the last thought I have is just like, this sounds kind of weird maybe, but it is kind of poetic that this Kyle and Amanda breakup is happening around season 10. They got together in season 1 where they were hooking up. They ultimately committed to one another. We saw them get married. We saw them build a business. We saw them overcome a lot. And they're likely going to be off of Summer House after this, after season 10. I mean, that's my guess. My guess is they'll all fully move over to the spinoff and maybe make appearances on Summer House, but ultimately their show will be in the city. And maybe the relationship was only supposed to serve this purpose. Maybe the relationship was only supposed to be for Summer House. The 10 sort of round number seasons of Summer House, maybe it was only supposed to last this long. 10 good summers, you know, to paraphrase from Carol Radziwill. I mean, you know, not all good summers, but you know what I mean. I don't know. There's something there. There's something there. And then lastly, shout out to Trina, or at T Waters on social media. One of the best meme makers, one of the quickest, most like, I mean, I want to study this woman's mind. She's amazing. Amazing follow. She pointed out that there is one person that connects this Instagram stories announcement to the other big one, the other big Instagram stories statement from Monday, the same day, from Brooklyn Beckham, where he was reaming out his parents, Victoria and David Beckham. And that one person connecting those two statements on Instagram stories is Miss Lexi Wood, our one season wonder from season 9 of Summer House, who also previously dated Brooklyn Beckham. That connection just kind of, I don't know, there's something about that too, right? I don't know. Kind of blew my mind. Anyway, those are my thoughts for now on Kyle and Amanda. I'm sure I'll have more in the future, but for now, keep listening to my chat with Jarrett Weisselman about The Traitors, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and Southern Charm. And please make sure to follow him at Jarrett Says on social media. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe wherever you're listening to this right now. We'll be back a couple times this week.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
I want to gab. All right, today we are gabbing with Jarrett Weisselman, who is one of the best posters of reality TV, I think, online. He has incredible commentary. He has been on Gabbing with Gib before, but not for a while. And I think the first time that he was on, we did like a Traitors mock draft of our sort of dream cast, which was super fun. But obviously, I needed to have him back on eventually to actually have a discussion about our shows. And with so much on, it felt like the perfect time. Jarrett, happy new year. How are you?
I am great. I am drowning in all things Bravo, reality television, but in the best way possible. So it's nice. Mm-hmm. It's nice to have a break from heated rivalry to think about anything else with my time.
I know. It honestly is. It's quite the gift that, you know, we're coming out of heated rivalry month and a half with the Traitors. Like, it's the only thing that could possibly sort of, you know, be the antidote to like the depression, the post-heated rivalry depression.
And I don't know what I would have done because I don't know if I had enough space in my mind or my heart to think about Traitors or The Pit or any of these other shows that are coming out right now if heated rivalry was still on, because it was so all-consuming. So it's a nice reprieve to remember I have other interests outside hockey.
Other interests, and also I have eyes for other men. I mean, Rob from Love Island. I mean, I'm sorry. There is space for all of them in my life. And so, you know, it proves that as well.
I am not a Love Island watcher. I have trouble caring about heterosexual romance generally.
I don't blame you.
In like the dating game kind of scenario. So I was aware of Rob. Obviously, I don't live under a rock. But I will tell you, I get it. Like, whatever spell he wove on the women and the viewers of that show, I got it basically in one episode of The Traitors. He is wildly charismatic. I mean, he's obviously extremely attractive. But there's just such like a swagger to him. It it really shows me in a lot of ways that I haven't evolved and used the lessons of the bad guys in my past to inform who I look to in the future, because he is like everything I'm supposed to not like in one person. And I'm just like, overalls and no shirt, like couldn't get better.
Sure. And like leaning back, man spreading on the couch, like that was a nice little moment in the background. Yeah, it's sort of like, I didn't watch that season of Love Island. I watched the most recent one, but I remember hearing about him and seeing him. And it kind of, I think that his performance on The Traitor so far, to me, proves like, don't judge a book by its cover, because I see him with snake tattoos in his overalls and I make a judgment about him. Yeah. And he's actually, I think, been playing the smartest game so far in the castle. And I've just been so impressed by him because he plays dumb very well.
Yeah.
Which is what he's doing actively. But he is really savvy and he's really smart. His confessionals really, to me, prove that.
I completely agree. I think he is very observant, right? And I think sometimes what you see is, you know, listen, I will just say, since Robbie's talking about traitors, the Rinna, Candace, Rob triumvirate is probably my favorite traitor alliance we've ever had on the show. It is so, because I think after last season, I was so frustrated with the traitor fighting, you know, like mm-hmm. Danielle and everyone going after each other. And I was worried that that was going to become the way people played the game. And so to see Candace and Rinna and Rob so have each other's backs, I mean, for now, but really like they do. I mean, Candace going up to Rinna last night and being like, Monet said your name, Rob letting Lisa know what Colton said. It's mm-hmm. clear that they really are protecting each other. And I like that because like, that's what you need. I want the turret to be a place of like happy murder, not screaming at each other all the time. I don't want to be Carolyn in the turret again, you know?
Yeah, no, they're giving each other pointers. They're coaching each other. Yeah. And it also, sometimes Rob, especially the way that he's sort of clocking Candace and Rinna, who have not played perfect games so far, like they've had a couple of like mm-hmm. Bringing bad attention to themselves. But when he calls that out in his confessional, it almost gives me, as like, coming from the Bravo bias, you know, like permission to admit like, okay, like, yeah, like Rinna shouldn't have done that. Or right. like Candace shouldn't have said this. He's like putting words to it for us yeah. in a way. And I like that feeling.
I agree. Yeah. Cause he's, like I was saying, he is doing the thing that's very smart, which is being quiet. And he's listening a lot. And I think what we've seen season after season, traitor after traitor, these people get caught in because they just talk too much, right? They just mm-hmm. end up saying the wrong thing one time. And when you don't really speak that much, it's so much harder to trip yourself up. The game is so complicated as it is. And so, you know, I think Candace obviously is already getting herself into situations. Love her for it. Rinna, oddly, is getting in trouble for not talking, which is kind of right. I have my issues with Colton, which I'm sure we can get into. But I did agree that he's like, I liked what he said when he was like, if Rinna wasn't a traitor, she would be so with me and attacking people in the round table. Like, that's her whole thing. It's like and he's right.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that was a really apt point. Because it was funny because at that round table, I was like, there are still so many people left.
I know.
And like five of them are talking at these round tables. Like, yeah. There are so many people who are like silent at these round tables. And I'm sure there's obviously a lot being cut out, but I'm like, sure. I feel like we're hearing from the same people over and yeah. over again, which is fine. But like that backed that point up and that sort of thought I had in my mind. And it's funny because I feel like Candace, I was really worried about her after those first three episodes because yeah. I thought the Portia thing, uh-huh. there was something else that I'm not remembering right now. But there were a couple of things where I was like, yeah. She's like putting herself out there in the wrong way right now yes. and too early. I think that she's already sort of curtailing herself a little bit. She's being yeah. a little bit more careful. Whereas like, so I was worried that Candace was going to be the first traitor to be mm-hmm. banished or murdered. I think it's going to be Rinna now.
I do.
You know, I think that the ball is kind of rolling in the Rinna direction. And if you're thinking like a producer, she's an obvious person to choose. And so, right. and Candace is a little bit less obvious if you aren't familiar with her game.
I completely agree. I think also what's really interesting is that they just, like the idea of coming into the game and thinking outside of the game to decide who would be what, you know, like mm-hmm. Candace correctly choosing Donna Kelsey to be a traitor because production would want her to be essentially yes. is how I think I would approach the game. Right. And I think that's really interesting. I will say, changing subject a little bit. But going to the candace of it all, what's really interesting about the Porsche vote is that since then, Ron has been held to the fire for his behavior with the Porsche vote, right? That he completely did all that. And Colton is doing the exact same thing and not really being held to the same standard. The way he's coming for people with less evidence than Ron brought. Listen, I will say, Porsche acted like a traitor.
Right. She put her foot in her mouth 8 times. Right. Exactly.
She said multiple times, like, well, when I killed them or I murdered them. And it was sort of like, what? It's week one. What else do you go on? Like,
yeah.
I don't think Ron's intentions were bad. I think he was like, oh my God, I won the game and it's week one, you know? And they're still 3 weeks, 4 weeks later holding it against him. Whereas you have Colton coming off the Tiffany vote, which I'm furious about.
Furious.
Saying, I made a mistake, but I'm not going to slow down and I'm going to keep playing aggressively. And everyone's kind of like, yeah, that makes sense. It's really unfair, sort of like, bias.
I agree. And it reminds me sort of from last season when they kept bringing up the thing about the coffins with Sierra from Summer House. And it was like, listen, I've been watching these first 5 episodes and they've voted out several Black cast members and they've been had a lot of attention on some other Black cast members on the show. And I think that I already see a conversation bubbling up, especially on Threads, about unconscious bias and how the traitors sort of highlights a lot of that. I think that's a conversation that I don't feel like fully adept to have in depth, like in a way, but I think it's absolutely a valid point to bring up about this show because it's being shown early in this season. And I think and Candace, I saw a clip of her on her own podcast on social media where she talked about, she's like, I did not want to banish Porsche first.
Right.
One, because she was a housewife, and two, because she was a Black woman. And we know that, like, in scary movies, historically, like, the Black character is always the first one killed. And so she brought all that up. And I thought it was such a intelligent, like, point of view to come from. And ultimately she had to sort of, or she didn't vote for Porsche, but they kind of had to go that route. But yeah, it's a really, I think, layered thing. And I think that it shows that the traitors is like a microcosm kind of like how people act in real life, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's the whole reason CBS, you know, had the diversity initiative a couple of years ago, because there was no way that people of color could succeed in reality shows when all of the people doing the voting were white, basically, right? And so, and you've seen ever since that, I believe, I could be slightly wrong, but every single Survivor winner has been a person of color since. Wow. And so it's just showing, like, when all things are equal, the best person wins, right? Not the one who benefits the most from the way they exist in the world. And I think there's something interesting there, too, on the Colton of it all. You know, what's really funny, I mean, listen, two things can be true at the same time, right? Michael Rappaport is a piece of garbage. So and what he did, by the way, he absolutely, whether it was conscious or not, was doing exactly what the roundtable accused him of doing when he called
him. I agree. I agree. That was my first instinct when he said that.
100%. Because also, that's the person he is in the outside world, too. Mm-hmm. You look at his Twitter for 30 seconds and you will see that that is very much who he is. Mm-hmm. But I think what's really interesting is Colton lives in this strange middle ground, right? He is somebody who his entire life has benefited from systems that help white people, handsome people, white men, athletes. Like, he may have been in the closet, but he also was raised in a society that was more on his side in any situation because of the way he looks. And so I thought, interesting, after the Tiffany vote, you know, him and Eric obviously went really hard for her. And after the vote, Eric felt genuinely bad, I felt. Like, the way he was like, I can't believe we did that. He's like, I really messed up. And I felt Colton was more like, well, that was not good for my game.
Yes.
You know, and I think that's the difference. It's like Eric actually cared that he messed up as a human being, whereas Colton was like, oh, that really puts me in a bad position here while we're playing this game.
Yeah, it's very much a self-centered reaction. And we saw, like, Ron, like, comforting him. And I'm like, why are we comforting Colton after he did that to Tiffany? It was so frustrating. And it's also, as a Big Brother watcher, it's so frustrating because I fucking love Tiffany on her season. And she masterminded the Cookout Alliance, which was like one of the most iconic modern day alliances in reality TV. And I just feel like viewers who aren't familiar with her previously didn't get to fully experience Tiffany. And I think the roundtable, she had her last roundtable.
Amazing.
Ate everyone up. I thought it was amazing. But I was disappointed that we couldn't get more of her.
I was too. And it's funny that the thing that ended up being, you know, what was used against her was that strategy that was making her so successful in Big Brother. Colton saying, you said I'm going to go for this person, this person, and this person. But that is essentially what the cookout succeeded on, right? By pairing everyone in the alliance with someone else. And so it had to be strategic. And so she was approaching this game in a similar way. I think aligning with Michael, whatever, but because she thought he was a traitor was smart. It just was the wrong person. But I think that ended up being her Achilles heel in that conversation, which is ironic because in the following roundtable, Colton was saying, you know, to Tiffany, you were saying I'm going to go for this person, and this person, and that was the issue. And then Colton ended up essentially mimicking that, saying I'm coming for this person, and this person. And it's not even the first time he's basically taking what someone else has said in another forum and using it at the roundtable to make it seem like it's his idea. He was the one who, I mean, Rob was the one who pointed out that I think everyone who first voted for Michael has now gone home, which Colton then said there. He also said the thing about, Rob had said the thing about, well, Lisa heard three times, you know, what was said during the murder. Rob brought, like, Colton brought that there. Colton's doing a lot of like, oh, I heard someone say something really smart. Let me take that as part of my argument that makes me look like I'm figuring this out.
And I think that that gets back to your point of, I mean, Colton's essentially code switching, and that everyone has every right to do that in different scenarios. But yeah. I think that for me, it points to Colton still not really fully knowing who he is and feeling sort of torn between who he was before he came out and who he is now. And it hasn't been that long since Colton came out of the closet, and he's still, I wanted to say when you brought up the comment that Michael made to him, you know, we can acknowledge also the fact that like that was a homophobic comment that he made about Colton, and that does not erase what Colton, his track record and what he did with Cassie and all that stuff. Like those two things can be true, you know, and you can even argue that he came out at a very convenient time for himself when that all was happening. That can still be true as well. But I think it's very damaging to imply that a gay man is deceitful just because he had to come out and he had to hide who he was. Like that's fucked up.
I mean, listen, if clearly he learned nothing from Jeff Varner on Survivor when getting his treatment of Zeke, it's the exact same thing in a way, right? The idea of using someone's queerness as a weapon against them, it never works out well for anyone. And so let's just all stop doing it because it's not true. And you end up getting hurt more than we do.
I'm obviously so happy that Michael Rappaport is banished and he's no longer just like taking up so much oxygen in the room. And
I know.
And as Maura said, like, you talk a lot, you don't say that much. Like, that was the perfect sort of encapsulation of who he is. But it's funny because last weekend or something, Vulture posted this thing that was like, is Michael Rappaport ruining the Traitors?
Yeah.
And I was like, he's only ruining it if he lasts for more than like one more episode. Right. I just commented that under the post. Chanel Ion, I don't know if you saw this, she commented underneath, she was like, you'll be shocked at how long he makes it. And to me, that implied that he was going to be around for like the full fucking season. And so I was so prepared I was like, buckling my seatbelt. Exactly. And, you know, I think it's just like the most prime example of getting a bad faithful out and somebody who's distracting to the mission loud and wrong. You know, it was the right choice.
Oh my God, absolutely. And the way Johnny handled it and Natalie handled it, like, I was like, great. Everyone was very clear there. And like, they didn't, like, no one even pretended to be surprised when he said, I'm a faithful. They're all like, moving on, you know, which I appreciated. On that note, I have to say it is early and it's based on nothing, but I have a feeling like Natalie is really doing, like, going to win this game. There's just something about the way she's positioning herself. I don't think anyone thinks she is a traitor. So her biggest risk is not getting a shield and being up for murder and the traitor is eventually feeling too threatened by her. But her social game seems great. Her roundtable, she's saying just enough to kind of be in the mix and be clear and let everyone know. And I just loved her. I loved her on her season of Survivor. Mm-hmm. I love her on this. And I'm really excited to see how she continues to play.
Me too. And I think she's getting a good edit. I think that
I agree.
With the traitors, it's this thing where there's so many people at the beginning. And so there are some people who truly they never show. But Natalie gets shown enough. You know, she gets shown enough where it's like, I think she's waiting for her time to really pounce and make herself known. But she's also voicing her opinion and enough. And I completely agree. I think she is one to watch. I think Stephen Coletti could be one of those sort of like Dylan Efron-y characters potentially. He hasn't proven that to me at all, but I kind of feel like he'll be around for a while, sort of my impression.
I think so too. I think there's the people who are in danger or like are targets to be traitors. And then there are the people who could be murdered. The risk, the murder piece is so interesting in the show, though, because you never know what the qualifications are that they're looking. Are they looking for somebody who feels so random and no one can understand why? And then it could absolutely be Natalie, or it could absolutely be Steven. Or are they trying to like strategically go for people? I'm curious, Gibson, what you think. Like, the episode ended with them having to make a murder and Rinna getting the Colton information. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like they can't kill Colton because there were so many people who are hearing what he was saying about Rinna. But what's your feeling on it?
I mean, if they kill Colton, I think that just kind of backs up our theory that Rinna is in danger.
Yeah, totally.
You know, like, I think that would just put the target bigger on her back. Yeah. Because even though she wasn't there for that conversation, obviously, like, she's his target right now. Yeah, it's always a hard balance. And, like, I do think, even though I sort of wanted Stanberry to last a little bit longer, I do think it was smart of a 2 out of 3 Housewives traitors group to go to get sort of the most unassuming housewife out of there. A smart decision for them. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a tough one. And then the Monet murder.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Monet could have been like an amazing player, you know, but Monet just never got the chance, I guess.
I mean, I think what Monet did while Monet was there was great, but I do feel like it was just, it was almost like too good in a way where you just, and I don't even know that the Rinna, like offhanded Rinna comment was a mistake necessarily, because everyone's doing that all the time. I think it's this person, I think it's this person. I do just think Monet comes across as so likable, so clearly a faithful. And if we're going back to the concept of like who is production picking, I know, I would imagine that I'm not following Bob with Monet as the first traitor chosen conceptually, right? But again, you never really know how much they're taking all of that into account. And as Ron has completely said, I don't know who any of you people are. So.
And Donna Kelsey was allegedly a big fan of everybody, but she never made one specific reference to anything.
I know.
Who's to say?
Who could say?
I'm curious what you think about this. It's an idea that is kind of a motif on this show at this point every season, which is like the balance between playing a good game and kind of going for and voting for like who really makes sense versus staying true to the housewife sisterhood. And it's something that it just comes up a lot. And Portia in her exit interviews is talking all about that on Watch What Happens Live. She was talking about that. Rinna was the first one to go against that because she voted Portia out. They obviously murdered Stanberry. Candace seems to be the person, I think, who's really kind of pushing for that. What do you make of that balance? Because it, again, we see it all the time on this show.
Yeah, I think it has to start that way. You know, I think you have to stick with your own in the beginning of the game, because the truth of the matter is, like, you don't know where the game is going to go and you need as many allies as possible. But as the game plays out, you know, like Rob said, like, everyone, this is a individual game at the end of the day, right? And you have to do what is best for you. So I think you want to stay with your alliance or your housewives alliance as long as you need to or can. But at some point, I think everyone needs to understand, like, 5 housewives aren't going to be the final 3, you know, because it's just not going to happen. And so it's really about, like, let's set each other up for success. Let's get each other, you know, because I think they probably get paid like by episode or something. Like, let's help each other get as much of a bag as we can. And then let's actually try to win, you know? And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think I would say the only person I would imagine who would disagree with that is Dorinda, who feels that you should be housewives until death and she should be the last one standing.
Right.
But I think always feels that way. And, you know, I think what's also a bummer for me about Dorinda, and I don't know if this is because, like, and I say this with love, they're like mostly sober on the show. I feel like we're missing a little bit of like that Dorinda energy that we want, you know? We got a little bit of it last night when she sort of felt like a little bit of fire on her feet. But I just think like her and Rinna in particular are kind of playing surprisingly quiet games for them. And I think whether it's Dorinda being traumatized by being the first one out last season or not, I'm excited for them to get into a little bit more. And maybe that's just they're playing it quiet in the beginning in a strategic way to rule up once they get into sort of the mids and the finals.
Right. My read on the Dorinda thing is that she's overcorrecting from last season.
She 100%.
Wanted so badly to last beyond the first night.
Yeah.
She gets her standing ovation at breakfast. It feels good to be there. Like, even after the mission in this past episode, she was so happy. She was like smiling ear to ear. And I think that's sort of why she's being so demure, kind of, and she's being more of like the gracious, like motherly Dorinda that we've also seen on Housewives. But I agree. I think part of it may be that there's no There's no martini bar. There's no, you know, but I do think that Dorinda, like, I have complete faith that when she does have her feet held to the fire, and I hope we get that moment at some point, that like she will pop off. I think that she can do that. And Rinna, I mean, I think she's playing a little just too uncharacteristic of herself.
Yeah.
And she sort of came in stronger and she's sort of gotten quieter as it's gone on.
And she's loud in the wrong moments, right?
Yes.
She's like super loud at breakfast.
It's like so much.
Too much. And then she's like silent at round table. And it's a little bit like, find the medium. Because the thing is, the breakfast Rinna is her, right? Mm-hmm. Like it, that is how she is all the time. She is loud and she is screaming and she always has been. And so there'd be nothing wrong with that. And it's just to have such a 180 in different spaces probably is a little bit, it's clearly like pinging on people's radar.
Absolutely. So, I guess speaking of Rinna, I think we should maybe switch over to Beverly Hills, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
If we must.
If we must. Yeah, I mean, listen, there's not that much to talk about. You know, we're still in Sedona and we're on this, I guess, where do we even start?
Well, here's what I will say. Here's what I will say
about
this season of Beverly Hills, because you've talked about it every week and I, God bless Rachel Zoe. Let Rachel Zoe forever, whether it's on Beverly Hills or another show, just having her on television in this way is magnificent. I think she's such a good mom. I think she's become such an interesting version of herself. Like, I think she's so much less of the caricature that we saw on Rachel Zoe Project, and everything feels so much more real and interesting now. I think the way she's engaging with the other women is perfection. I think being able to go from having a conversation with Dorit and Bose about a relationship she has no context on with Kyle from three seasons ago, but navigating it really well, to enduring Amanda's idiotic matcha curiosity. I mean, listen, there have been some flop freshmen. I mean, Angel on Potomac being one of them. It's not a great season for freshmen, although I love Tia. But Amanda is like everything I dislike in a Real Housewife. She is so aware of the show and the machine and the brand and the optics and the cameras and the machinations, and just everything feels fake and phony. I mean, and the labels and the way she talks about them and the constant one-upsmanship. She's like that Kristen Wiig character who's always like, I also had a pony growing up and I had three ponies and I love all my ponies and some of them fly. And it's just like, oh
literally,
my God. If I was in the car with Amanda and Erica when Amanda was on the phone, I would have actually asked the car to stop, let her out of the car to finish a conversation, and then we could have resumed our trip. It's so rude. And also, adult people don't need to be sitting three people in a three-seater.
In a Suburban.
It's just unnecessary. There's a whole row of seats behind there. Like, we don't do that. Make someone crawl in the back. Make Amanda crawl in the back and turn on some music.
Yes, yes. It's funny because I feel like Rachel almost adds this like higher tier of like person on this cast that is like, so they're the affluent ones, they're the aspirational ones, and she's like a next level up from that because she's so established and such an icon. And so it creates this thing where I think that like the rest of them sort of want to impress her, like
totally
implicitly or very explicitly. I think that's why like her and Dorit are sort of gravitating towards each other. Yeah. And then there's Amanda who adds like kind of a tier below them, you know, below Sutton. Sutton. And that's why Erica and Dorit, it's so classic for like, it takes like another outsider to have like the previous outsider finally be accepted by the inner circle.
Yes,
and so
that's
why
Dorit
and Erica are sort of finally out on this trip, you know, being supportive of Sutton, sort of in a way that feels pretty genuine to me, I would say. And it's, again, like she's the less annoying person compared to Amanda for them.
It's a really good point. I think it's really sad that Sutton's been on this show for, I think, 6 years. And she's like, I finally feel like a part of the group now. Like it makes sense that she would behave the way she behaved if she never felt welcomed. But I think that we just need more. I just feel like there's not really anything happening. Like my biggest takeaway is that like, when like the shot of Kathy Hilton laying in her bed watching TikToks and laughing was the best part of the episode. Like I was a little bit like, all right, let's get into it. And I saw a clip of Dorit on Watch What Happens Live where the subject of her and Kyle comes up and Andy's like, no, in two episodes,
in two
it's
weeks.
Like, yeah, he's like, it's like an apocalypse. So I'm like, well, great. We have yeah. something to look forward to.
But that's like a pretty slow start for this
yeah.
season if it takes two more episodes. I agree. Dreed had really, I just finished watching her watch Happens Live. She had like, uh-huh. she had the cunty energy on that episode.
Yeah.
And like there was another time when she was asked, what do you make of these rumors that Mo and Kyle are back together? And she's like, oh, it's so boring. she was like, you know that if that was actually happening, Kyle would be the first one to tell us. So she's like, her and Kyle are not in a good place right now.
Yeah.
And it's going to, hopefully that means good TV. And I agree that the best moment was the Kathy moment or what you said, which was the matcha moment. I mean, when she walks into this fucking coffee shop, she's like, is your matcha ceremonial grade? And Rachel's like, what? So you can have a ceremony? Like, what the fuck's going on here? Like, again, if you're like looking uppity and like, to Rachel Zoe, like you're doing something wrong. Do you think Amanda knows what she's... Do you think that Amanda is this way? Do you think it's heightened by the editing? Do
yeah.
you think that she thinks that she's doing something and it's not landing the way she thinks it's landing? It's hard to read like how authentically her it is, I guess.
Yeah. I think she thinks she's eating. Like, I think she's like...
so embarrassing.
To say to Sutton last week, like, and in that moment, I got Erica. It's like, first of all, you did not get Erica. Second, Erica has no idea what you're talking about. And the third thing, the thing that she got her on isn't even a gotcha. No. You know what I mean? So it's like, you don't really get it. And because you think you understand the world you're in and you just really, really don't. I think interestingly, someone who looks like she might not understand the world she's in, but very much does is Jennifer Tilly.
Right.
And you could not make me hate Jennifer Tilly if you spent years talking shit about her. She is Oscar nominated, but like an icon, but also such a good person, clearly, who just lives to have fun. I mean, I think
she's a fun loving person.
Yes. Which must be nice when you have like, you know, millions of dollars constantly coming in and it helps you to be fun. But it doesn't change the fact that just like she approaches everything with like a childlike wonderment that I actually find really endearing and authentic. And I think, but in the moment, at the end of the episode with her and Kyle outside, I was like, oh, okay, but it's not all sunshine and rainbows. Like, there is another side that you're kind of not bringing to the show, but not in a nefarious way, but it's just not how you normally live your life. But as a human being, we all have moments, we all have frustrations, we all, you know, reach a breaking point, which, to be honest, if you've been friends with Sutton for 20 years, I can't believe it's just now you're hitting the breaking point.
Yeah, it hasn't happened yet. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, no, that's really well said. And yeah, I viewed that moment as not like, because I think Jennifer has been authentically herself, but she, I think as a friend of two, you get like a little bit flattened into being a little bit more of a two-dimensional
Absolutely.
Character.
Yeah,
and so
sure.
she has just been sort of like adding humor sort of in the way that Kathy has, but in Jennifer's own way.
Yeah.
But I thought, I'm glad that we saw that moment with her and Kyle because it felt like sort of a peek into like how she really has been sort of harboring this feeling about Sutton a little bit and also about the Garcelle situation that she has not voiced before. And
yes,
I think the Sutton thing is, it's very interesting because, you know, the Garcelle thing and the Avi thing sort of happening around the same time. They're both incredibly sensitive topics for her and she doesn't want to get into the details or really admit what really happened. And it was, I guess we'll circle back to that in a second, but you should watch the after show if you have not already, because because Jennifer is with Sutton and Kathy on the after show.
Oh, that's interesting.
And Jennifer really gets tripped up talking about it.
I'm sure she...
Because she's looking directly at Sutton.
Yeah.
And Sutton is like, this is what you said about me and Garcelle. And I don't know why you said that. That's not what Garcelle said on our trip last year. It's a fascinating moment. It's hard to sort of put into words, but it's still pretty raw, I think, between them is what I'm trying to get at.
I can totally understand that. I think the thing that's really hard about the situation is Sutton is clearly not someone who sees herself clearly and is like obviously someone who doesn't have a good like read on the way people feel about her or why things are happening. To come into this season and be saying like, I don't really know what happened with Garcelle or like why we're not friends is crazy to
me. Self-reflection.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I think that is probably really hard for Jennifer, who likely just had a moment and it was caught on camera and it obviously becomes a thing because Kyle in true Kyle fashion runs to Sutton next week and tells her what Jennifer said. But I think obviously like that's going to be something they're working through a little bit this season. And so, but for Jennifer, I'm sure it's like, I want everything to be okay because I know how this person is. Like, I don't know about you, but for me, I think it's so important in friendships to be aware of like the kind of friend someone is capable of being to you.
Totally.
Is if you You know, it goes back to actually the Dorit and Kyle thing. It's like, if you think someone is your best friend and they don't think you are their best friend, it's going to create this constant sense of conflict because your expectations of them are outsized based on what they're willing or able or capable of giving you. And I think that goes also knowing how people need to like process tough situations and move on. And so I think for Jennifer, she's like, I know Sutton will not acknowledge the situation, process this conversation and deal with it. So we just have to move on. So stop asking me about it in front of her, because that's not going to help her get what she needs in order to sort of keep things moving in this friendship.
And also for Jennifer, who has sort of existed outside of the show for like 3 or 4 years before she joined it as a friend.
Right.
She knows what the show does to friendships. And I think to her, like her friendship with Sutton is a real true friendship and for years and years. And so I think she's also really scared that this is going to turn into some huge thing.
Yeah.
I think her reaction also sort of backs up the fact that Sutton and Garcelle did have a real friendship at some point, you know, because she's, I think she, to me, she reads as like worried that that's going to happen to them slightly. It's not as intense yet, obviously, but it can snowball very quickly on these shows, as we know.
Absolutely. And I never not thought the Sutton Garcelle thing was real or not. But again, I do think it was very, as Jennifer said, one-sided.
Before we jump to Southern Charm, I just have to call out what I think was Amanda's weirdest moment of the whole season so far. Sutton is like in tears at a dinner table. It's awkward and quiet. And Amanda just goes, "Do you cry often?"
It's
what a fucking weirdo. I'm sorry. That's weird.
It's very weird. I it's hard because it's like, I know what she was trying to do, right? What she was trying to do was like have like an emotional connection with her in this moment. But it's like Sutton is not someone who gets emotional. And when she does get emotional, she cannot hear anything that is being said. I mean, that's like that is the most common sort of housewife characteristic is like in moments of anger or sadness, they lose the ability to hear outside voices, whether they're rational or not. And for Amanda to like lean in there at that moment for someone she doesn't really know and has already fought with and doesn't really like is bananas.
And there's truly nothing worse than like you're at like a birthday dinner or you have like a big group dinner and you're just stuck with the wrong person who's trying to bond with you. And you're just like, I want to be at the other end of the table. Yeah. There's no worse feeling than that.
I would have picked up my plate and moved somewhere else.
Literally. Oh my God. All right, let's jump over to Southern Charm to end this out. At first, for a couple weeks there, I was like, I feel like we're kind of, you know, it's the same thing we've seen before. Austin and Craig, you know, back and forth.
Yes.
You know, a couple of like new women in the mix who like they're sort of fighting over or whatever. Like, I feel like we've seen this before. But this week I kind of was like, you know what? I'm actually feeling different things about each of them, like in this different sort of web of connections, I guess. So like, I believe that Craig did lead Sally on.
Of course he did.
And she was also being sort of a pick me, and she's also not been a great friend to Vanita. But then I also think that Vanita hasn't necessarily been like the best friend to Sally either in certain capacities.
Yeah.
And then like Austin's being a good friend, or Austin is trying to be a good friend to Craig, but then he also runs back to the sleepover and repeats everything he said. So it's like it's a little bit more complicated from this episode going forward, which I appreciate because I thought the season was going to be like, just
more
like
the same. Yeah.
Predictable. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I'm Southern Charm is a tough show for me just always.
The heterosexual relationships.
Well, sure. There's that. But listen, but then I love Summer House. So it's like, right. I think there's something about like the dark years that we went through. I had to stop watching for a couple of years. Like I think it was that season with, what is his name, JD or something, where he was clearly
JT.
Like... No. Before that, it was like that guy and his wife, and like maybe he was like abusing her.
And all
the women kind of banded together. Yeah, like it got so dark, and so I kind of like had to stop watching for a while, and then I came back when Madison sort of was in her grandness. And so that said, it's always a little tricky for me. It's like not my favorite, but I've watched it for 11 years now or whatever. I agree with you. I think the relationship and the dynamics are more interesting. I kind of need Austin and Craig to either fix this friendship or move on.
I agree. Because it's
truly like a toxic relationship in some ways if they continue to live in this space of like having animosity and having jealousy and being antagonistic. And I'm not really sure like what the root issue is besides the fact that honestly, like, I agree with Craig that Austin wants to be single and he's in this relationship that he kind of no longer wants to be in. Clearly, they're no longer dating. But then Craig is also a liar and a manipulator. And so I think I thought Whitner, who I could not love more.
Yeah, he's a good guy and cute. And yeah,
he put it so perfectly in his confessional when he was like, you have someone who is extremely like insecure in Austin, who, and then you've got someone in Craig who always needs to be right. And those two things, like, they just may not go together. And I think that's kind of what it is. Like, they were brought together by the show and mm-hmm. maybe like this is the end of the friendship, but also then what happens to the show? So it's hard. They're kind of kept together because of because of Southern Charm, which we've seen before, right, on other shows. And so it's just always never, it's always been romantic relationships, not friendships yeah. that have kept people together. So it is. And I agree with you on Sally. I loved her last season. I'm a little bit not loving what she's bringing this season.
Me too. Me too.
The energy is weird. And I feel bad for Charlie, who kind of just like came into this like, great, I'm going to have such a good time. And then has done, in my opinion, all the right things as a friend should with Sally. She's like, do you like him? I won't touch him. And she's like, no, please date him. And so she's like, okay. And now she's being punished for that. I will say the Sally getting chickens because essentially Craig would come pick them out with her
is really,
it's honestly, it's like, it's on par with Shark Tooth for me with, it's like, that's kind of the same yeah. like ick that I'm getting in that moment of like just watching this happen. And I'm just like, oh my God.
And then on Watch What Happens Live, she's like, I didn't get them. Or on the after show, I didn't get them because Craig got them. Like, I've always wanted chickens. Like, I just wanted him to go. Like, it was.
Yeah.
There's a lack of. She can't admit. She's also so. She's downplaying so much in real time.
Yes.
How much she liked Craig. She clearly. Totally. It feels like in the season that she wanted to marry Craig. I'm sorry. Like, that so. Was. Like, it's like.
I know.
And now she's like, no, like, it was never that serious. We never even hooked up. It's like, well, you wanted to.
Yeah, I think she's kind of doing a little bit of like rewriting history in some degree. Mm-hmm. And I think there's also something, I think the real villain in this scenario, honestly, is Craig's hot tub. Because because conceptually, the idea when you hear it of like, oh, we were in the hot tub till 4 a.m, it sounds so sexual, right? It mm-hmm. sounds like we were hooking up, we were having like, or whatever it was. Like, you, first of all, you would prune so much like if you're in it for that long. So like something else. But it just, there's something so inherently intimate about he and I were in the, and the way they kept saying it, like we were in the hot tub till 4, you know? So the vibe we were getting was one of like romance brewing, or like Craig and Sally were kind of on the same page, whether they were just like hooking up for fun or if it was for real. I think that what Craig said in his confessional though was kind of the answer, which was, I did like you and then we didn't end up hooking up and I stopped liking you. And it's sometimes it's just as simple as that, right? And it's like, it doesn't make him sound great as a person. But the truth is like, yeah, I liked you, but I just wanted to hook up with you. And then we didn't hook up. So you're not my friend because all we were doing was hanging out to have sex.
Yes. And then, but he's missing the piece of like communicating that.
Right. Totally. As always.
In a like
as
healthy
always.
Way or like. Yeah. Because you're right. It's like, I assumed that even though, you know, we had known before that he had invited her to stay over and right. she said no. And I yeah. assume that means that like they had hooked up but not had sex yet or something sure. like that. For a little bit, I thought they were lying about not hooking up. And now I'm like, now I believe they did not hook yeah. up.
So it's just, I just think it's like, it's just Craig's definition of dating and the way he's going about dating right now, I just think probably was not where Sally was at. Cause she's talking about, I want to have kids and I want to have.
Right.
And what's funny is Craig was that way too with Paige, but maybe he just doesn't want that now. I will say, you know, the thing where like it takes you like 3 months to lose 10 pounds and one day to put on 10 pounds. Like if you yes. eat badly, you know what I mean? It's like you got to exercise really hard and it takes of forever. Course. The way Craig has backslid in the short amount of time for how far he had grown with Paige, like he has not been with her for less than a year. And it is like all of that was undone with the exception that now he works out and still looks really hot. But like all of the stuff that I felt like he was working on to make himself better got thrown out the window. And it makes me like, it makes me mad because I kind of like an idiot, like believed in his thing
yeah,
with Paige. And like he was like, I wanted to change for her. No, it's like you changed to please her, not for you. It's, I don't know. It's just like a little bit of a bummer.
Totally. And it sort of felt like he was doing deeper changes, but it just turns out they were more surface level.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And yeah, he's like, he's a total chameleon to whoever he's with, basically.
Yes,
and
right.
like, Yeah. Yeah. And I think that you're right, that him and Sally are in different places. He is clearly in a hookup mode, yeah, a party mode.
Right. I don't know. I'm curious to see where it goes. Like, if they ever go on this like oyster trip. I will say though, for a myriad of reasons, I'm not a huge Austin fan. I never really have been. Obviously, the way he treated Sierra was like so awful. And he seems to have done that to a lot of people. My favorite Austin is him lying on his stomach, drinking some wine, like literally like this, like with gossiping the with the girls, with his like little feet kicking. I was like, he is so baby girl right now in a way. Like, I'm like, I want that. I love that. But
the way that he raced to Madison's house, gave her a hug, drunk as fuck.
I know.
Laid down on that bed on the floor and just spilled everything Craig said.
I know.
Listen, I agree. That was a great moment for him. And I'm curious what you think about the Vanita Sally thing specifically, because again, I completely really feel like Sally is totally only thinking about herself and this whole her friendship with Vanita. But I also think it's like Vanita did tell Sally, don't call me. Don't come running back when he dumps you or when he's done with you. And then she's like, I told you so. Why didn't you call me?
Right.
To her face. And then she storms out of the sleepover. That didn't land with me. I didn't love the way that Vanita carried herself at the sleepover. I know it's an awkward situation, but if you're going to be like, I told you so, you should have called me.
Yeah.
You have to kind of stay there and stand 10 toes down with it and like really say it with your chest.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a couple of things here. This is just a throwaway, but go back and rewatch the slumber party scene where all that goes down. The editing on it is so wild. Mm. You never see someone speaking when you hear their voice talk.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm also curious. We know the Southern Charm editors love to like
play
a little like puzzle Jenga game. I just kept noticing, I'm like, oh, I'm hearing everyone talking, but I'm not seeing anyone talking. And the jump, it was a lot of Molly's reactions, which God bless. Mm. And then Vanita getting up. So I'm a little bit curious if like Vanita were to say like, was that actually how that all played out?
Let's see the raw footage.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's funny you say that, because in the Craig and Sally scene in the pet store,
there
was like the most frankenbited ass fucking response that Sally had when Craig said that you'd be a great mom and wife. I forget what she said, but I was like, that whatever sentence we just got from her was taken from 8 different places.
Totally. Yeah. But going back to your first question, here's my thing with Vanita. Vanita clearly has a habit of putting her energy into people who don't reciprocate it or deserve it.
I mean,
the JT situation, every time I think about what that woman endured with that man, it's like so upsetting. It's so upsetting. And I think she's kind of doing it again here. I think it's because Vanita is a good person. I think she obviously, she comes in, I think, to every situation, like giving 100%. And I think it's, you know, she's talked about this, I think, a little bit on the show about like not having a ton of friends or close friends growing up, if I'm remembering correctly.
She said in this episode, she's lost friends before. So she sort of has that scar.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you feel that. And sometimes it's one of those things like, you know, Lenny and of Mice of Men, where you hold the thing you love so tight that you end up killing it. And I think she, not intentionally, but I think she loves and she comes in so hot that it can kind of like some, because I agree with you. I don't think in theory there's anything wrong with Sally doing her and continuing to date Craig. I mean, although if you like take into account all the stuff that it sounds like was happening behind the scenes with like Craig Krennic, like,
right. It's not a romantic thing. It's like
he's trying to take my money.
Threatening her job. Yeah, exactly.
So like that's more fucked up, I think, than anything else. But I think she's entitled to do whatever she wants. I think Vanita, it just continues to invest in the wrong people and it keeps biting her in the ass.
Right.
I think if you look at Vanita's relationship with like Rodrigo or Leva or Molly, like it feels very like go with the flow. We're all kind of on the same page. But I think it seems like Vanita, her reaction to her doing too much and somebody sort of pulling away is for her to even come in even hotter and give more to kind of like, oh, no, I can fix this. I can fix this. I don't want to lose a friend, which makes me have so much empathy for her.
Definitely.
Yeah, but I do also think we got to get Vanita off the show. Not in a get Vanita off my television way, but get her somewhere where
she's not like a productive environment for
her at all. It's not. Like, this is why I love her friendship with Sierra. I'm like,
me too.
Date Carl.
Move to New York.
Date Carl. Move to New York. Come to Summer House. Sierra needs a new best friend because obviously Paige is gone. And their real life friendship is wonderful. And I love how Sierra to me, Sierra having Vanita's back with so much of this stuff is what Vanita deserves in a friend. And it's nice mm-hmm. to see her actually having it in someone who is as equally amazing as Sierra is.
Yes, 1,000%. Like all of that. Yes, yes, yes. And it's like, and I feel like maybe part of the reason why we see Vanita place all this energy in people, then the wrong people, is because she wants to stay on the show and keep this job. And like, yep. even on the after show, she's like, let me clear something up. And then she's like, she said, Sally is not a girl's girl. She yeah. just wasn't one to me. And so she, and she, I think she's afraid, I understand why, of just like going full throttle at somebody.
Totally. For sure.
There's this whole power thing, I'm sure, on the show. And, but it's like, I'm also like, Vanita's been around for 4 or 5 years at this point. And it's like, I wish that she could feel empowered, but she clearly doesn't. And I don't think that's her fault by any means.
Well, it's, I would imagine it's a little bit like the Sutton thing, right? Where she doesn't right. feel like part of the group. And so she's constantly like trying to find a way in and ending up in conflict because yeah. she's not really, like, you know, production brought her on the show. Was she really organically any of these people's friends? Like, if she was, I'm not on the show. So I think that's probably a little bit of it, too. So it's like, put her in a place where she's really actually friends with people and see what happens. I bet we'd see a totally different Vanita who would be as well-dressed, but also have more fun.
Yeah, totally. It's a funny season, too, because Madison is there, but she's pregnant. And so,
I know.
As we all know, like, when a reality star is pregnant on our Bravo shows, like, they... And understandably so, of course, but like we just don't get the full kind of experience with them.
Because they're not drinking. You can say it.
Right. They're not drinking. And like they're just like kind of, and they kind of can just like sit back and like enjoy totally. The show. And yeah. Madison's sort of doing that. But she's such a star that I'm like, I feel
her absence,
like the lack of her full presence.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree. Also, speaking of, and I'm not really mad about it, but like, where's Shep? Like, where's like,
didn't they get like they got texted pictures of him on some vacation or something?
I guess. I don't know.
Why is he still on the show?
Well, I mean, he's not really. I mean, I wonder if like the last season like really stressed him out about the way he like what he shared and what happened to him and the way he came across. And he's like, I'm gonna do a little bit less and I'm gonna let other people
smart
take their front seat. I mean, it's not a bad idea, but it's like he said something, it was like in the first episode or maybe the second episode. And he's like, well, here I am. And I'm like 45. And I'm like, oh my God. You're Whitney.
Don't remind us.
you're Whitney now. Like you are the older, like this older man with these 20-year-olds going to bar. And I'm just like, that's tough. And I think I saw on TikTok, like there's a clip of Shep from like season 1 or 2. That's like, if I'm still 45 and doing this, someone shoot me. And I'm just like,
well,
here we are.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think my thing with Southern Charm is people come and go, but it always ends up feeling like the misadventures of 3 grown
yes.
man boys. Like no matter what season it is, it always comes back to these 3 being idiots who can't grow and can't evolve. And I think we sometimes lose more interesting stories as a result of like deferring to them as the protagonists of the show in a lot of ways, even when they are being antagonistic. It's just like, if they're like the Kyle Richards or like the central point of the show, we're always going to kind of be in this place where interesting women or queer men kind of never really get the shine or the spotlight
right.
they could, because everything has to be built around their like dysfunctional lives.
Yeah, it's like Rodrigo is a cast member on the show. We don't hear anything about him ever.
I know.
And yeah, and it's this interesting thing because on Summer House, like there was such a conceit with that. There is such a conceit
right.
with that show that like it made sense to have this new show that they could sort of yeah. graduate into.
Yeah.
Whereas on Southern Charm,
nowhere to go.
Technically, it's just about people in Charleston.
Right.
It's more specific as you just explained. But like, how do you evolve the show? Like, do you give the Southern Charm boys their own spinoff where it kind of continues to be this? And then you sort of bring in younger guys again? Or like, because I don't know, I am increasingly frustrated at getting to know the women on the show in particular
yes.
for 2 seasons and then
saying
goodbye
gone.
To them once they're no longer romantic prospects for the men.
I completely agree. Like, I wish we were still watching Olivia. I think like she was so interesting to me. And
me too.
Listen, after... And by the way, everything that's happening with Naomi right now, Get cameras on Naomi.
Brooks Nader's ex-husband. She's fucking engaged to him. Come on.
I mean, like, that's what I want to see. And then also to bring Naomi back in this time in Craig's life. I mean, I think Naomi's like, I am happy and I'm not putting myself in that situation, but do it for us.
She's a good reality star.
I loved her. I loved her. And so I just think you're right. I just think we end up not really. I mean, who was that gay guy last season we met for like, what, like six
Ryan,
episodes?
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Sure. Like, where have you? Anyway, so it's tough, but it also is what it is. And that's kind of what people are coming to Southern Charm for.
Exactly. So. I think people, it's almost comforting at this point.
Yeah.
To see them. Yeah. Well, Jared, I think we got our three shows down within the hour. That's great.
Yes.
Again, a lot to talk about. This is exactly what I needed, exactly what I wanted. And we'll have to have you back sooner rather than not. We're not waiting another year this time.
That's good. You know where to find me. I'll be in the turret good. With Rob. Just knock before you come in.
Not if I'm there first, okay? Have a great weekend, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay, bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time. Thank you.